This is The Takeaway. I'm Todd Zwillick, in for John Hockenberry. Thank you so much for listening today. And we're just a little more than 20 days away from the start of a new administration in Washington and what might very well mark the beginning of a new era in American politics. We've spent a lot of time over the last few years talking about the deep divisions and warring factions in the Republican Party. Donald Trump won in 2016, in many ways running against the party he now leads. And if it looks like something close to unity now, it's safe to predict that those divisions will show themselves again before long. But President Trump's success also marks a gigantic failure of the Democratic Party. Not only did Democrats lose the White House and fail to take back control of the Senate, but look at the long term here. During President Obama's 8 years in office, the party lost more than 1,000 elected positions between governorships, Senate and House seats, and many, many more seats on the state level. And just to underscore the challenges that Democrats have in front of them here, not since 1928 have they had this little governmental power on a national and local level. And here's a bewildering fact. It's all at a time when President Obama is leaving office with an approval rating of nearly 60%. That's double what George W. Bush had 8 years ago. As Donald Trump begins his presidency, both parties are going to be looking at how they can refine their platforms and their messages. And we'll be talking a lot about what the future of each party looks like over the next few weeks and months. And today, one voice who's highly critical of both parties, Ralph Nader, the consumer advocate and former Green Party presidential candidate, has been working his entire political life to bring a liberal third party to the mainstream. Bernie Sanders brought a taste of Nader's brand of populist progressivism closer to the Democratic Party than it's been in more than a generation. And Nader says the Democratic Party today has a long way to go if it's going to be able to harness progressivism under President-elect Donald Trump.
Yeah, it represents a healthy slice of public opinion, but not very much public action. It's not organized sufficiently, to counteract the corporate Democrats who control the party, much less the ruthless Republican Party that's marinated in Wall Street and militarism. Bernie Sanders helped congeal this progressive opinion, but when he was aced out in some unfair ways and didn't get the nomination for the presidency on the Democratic Party ticket from Hillary Clinton, he supported her without any qualifications, and other than some rhetoric that she talked about student loan reform and various changes that he was advocating. And now that those millions of people are not organized, they're not really connected to one another. He has a group called Our Revolution, but doesn't seem to be that active in mobilizing his own base. I've suggested that he should hold massive rallies right after the election from the mall in Washington all the way to California in order to bring visibility and cohesion behind his agenda of millions of people, many of them young people, who are now rather disillusioned and cynical and are withdrawing from the political process.
You feel like massive rallies, public show of force, very visible actions like that are the way to solidify progressive now, and it has to be around Sanders?
Yes. Well, President Obama's got a few weeks left, and he could do what he has not done. He could go to a major ballroom in Washington, D.C., a few blocks from the White House, and address 1,000 civic leaders with millions of members around the country in the environmental, consumer, labor, religious charities, neighborhood groups, you name it. And I hope he does that. He's never done that. He's gone as far as India to promote motorcycles of Harley-Davidson and Boeing planes. He's gone to factories around the country. He's walked across Lafayette Square to pay homage to the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. But he's never addressed the citizen groups who actually make America what it is. These people are doers. They're not just BS, rhetorical, redundant people. They actually improve things at the neighborhood, state, and national level, relating to food, clean air, clean water, the kind of improvements now are rising in the minimum wage, better use of tax dollars. And he doesn't seem to recognize that. So he just has a few weeks left where he can have a valedictory with a great speech, focusing mass media attention on all these citizen groups, encouraging people to join up and to support them, and leave a good legacy for the civil community, which was shut out of the election process almost totally by the mass media.
And so going forward for Democrats now, I mean, I realize you're not a Democrat, but you are progressive, and so many progressives are, like it or not, in the Democratic fold here and remain so. A lot of these questions are going to become legislative, aren't they, after January? I mean, you have Democrats now trying to figure out their strategies and tactics, not only against Donald Trump, but Republicans in Congress, with things like the repeal of Obamacare, with Medicare reform. How do you see the best way for Democrats to access the progressive voters that you're talking about?
Well, they don't have that much firepower in Washington, the Democratic Party. You know, they've lost the House, the Senate, the White House, and by substantial majorities in the Congress. So they have to go back to the reservoir of democracy and the reservoir for progressive politics, which is the civil society. They've got to go back to the citizen groups that can mobilize people to do things back home, mobilize people to get out and vote, mobilize people to run as candidates at the local, state, and national level. And so, you know, I really think, Todd, that if we don't pay attention to the citizen groups, which is really the fundamental reservoir of what kind of society we have, we're going to be distracted by ever more entertaining, corrupt, and outrageous politics, as symbolized by Donald Trump.
Well, Ralph Nader, you've talked about Bernie Sanders, of course. He's not a young man. And not getting any younger, doesn't have another presidential race in him, I don't think. Who else in the movement, either in politics or outside of politics now, would you identify as somebody who can start to raise a flag here?
Well, I think it's clearly Senator Elizabeth Warren's turn. Actually, the public's become more tolerant of older candidates, even though the polls 10, 15 years ago said that was a strike against a candidate if the candidate was older than 65.
Oh, lucky for you, huh? Too bad you're an author now.
So I think Elizabeth Warren is going to step up. She's next in line, and she has a terrific way of talking to regular people around the country. She comes from Oklahoma and poor income family roots, and she has not indicated anything. It's too early, obviously, but I think she's going to be ready.
You've written recently to workers that Donald Trump has already started to betray them. I know you don't think that the Trump presidency is headed to a successful place. Will that be self-evident in 2 years, or does it take a movement to highlight it?
It takes a movement to highlight it because his strategy, and he really has one now, is that he will be the front man for the most reactionary, corporatist, militarist administration, digging into the country and driving it into the ground on behalf of the rich and powerful behind him. And he'll sugar talk the American people. He'll sweet talk. He'll engage in false statements. He'll get massive media. And he sort of is the massive sugar-coating fig leaf over the shame of the government run by the people he has picked, who are about the most anti-people nominees you could imagine. I mean, these are people who want to freeze the minimum wage, get rid of public schools, privatize Medicare, corporatize everything that they can touch, have no sense of public institutions, public philosophy, democratic practices. They'll continue their gerrymandering, their voter suppression. It's going to be a challenge even for him as the front interface with the public to see if he's going to fool or flummox or flatter enough people to retain his base, which at its peak was not a majority of the voters, as we know. Hillary Clinton got 2.7 million more votes than he did.
As bad as all these picks are in the eyes of a progressive like you and maybe millions of others, this should be a real political target of opportunity for progressives.
One would think. But, you know, the progressives were beaten up by Nixon and beaten up by Reagan and beaten up by pseudo-corporate Democrats like Clinton, and they didn't show they had any fight in them. And so is there a progressive movement, or is it just progressive public opinion supporting a lot of good things that don't get reflected in the representatives that are elected and go to the state and congressional legislature? I think the jury's still out on that, Todd. I don't know whether there are. I mean, the high schools spilled out after the election and demonstrated in parts around the country, and there are marches, but that's not enough. That energy, if it isn't connected with in personam lobbying on each senator and representative, goes up into the ether and dissipates and results in pessimism and withdrawal.
Well, Ralph Nader, before we let you go, you know, I can envision a Donald Trump tweet about you. You know, failed presidential candidate and loser. Ralph Nader says, "I betray workers. He's never done anything for anyone. Sad." How's that from Donald Trump? It sounds
like
something.
How about my responsive tweet failed gambling czar, cheated all people in his business, his workers, his consumers, shareholders, suppliers, creditors, and bragged about it.
That's a tweet storm, Mr. Nader. That doesn't fit in one tweet.
I'll leave it up to you to slice it up.
Ralph Nader, thank you.
Thank you, Todd.
Ralph Nader is a consumer advocate and former Green Party presidential candidate. And when he's not thinking about horse races between elephants and donkeys, yeah, stick with me here. Ralph Nader's also an author and a writer. He's been writing a lot about animals lately. His latest book is a fable. It's called Animal Envy.
Yeah, the basic thrust of the fable is a human genius creates an application that allows the animal world finally to communicate to human beings and to communicate to themselves and to go into the rich store of knowledge of humans.
Nader says his book is really about understanding the human impact on animals and, in turn, better understanding the delicate balance of nature.
We have to focus on the civil society, which is really one of the reasons I wrote this book, which is designed to give the animal world the communication capability to tell humans what's going on in their lives and basically to say, look, don't stereotype us as just instinct-driven DNA organisms, mammals, reptiles, insects. We've got detection capabilities, communication capabilities that your technologies can only dream about and can learn from. And if you don't take care of us, you're going to destroy yourself in terms of the natural habitats and the environment.
You can find more about Animal Envy on our website at thetakeaway.org.